Blog Talk Radio.
Out there in Blog Talk Radio land, this is your host and friend, the Sand Tiger, DJ Southeast Vince, coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina, and this is Black by Color Only on CNM Radio. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race and take on the apostles of blackness. Hopefully, you'll get something out of this show, and if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well with respect. I'll push the kick button and you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat. This is a fruit bat free program. You are listening to Black by Color Only. Dear guests and friends out there in Blog Talk Radio land, once again, this is your host. This is your host and friend, DJ Southeast Vince, coming at you from Durham, North Carolina. And if you would like to come on the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. 646-478-5284. And you can call in and talk about anything related to the subject matter, but I will give you a word of warning. I will not tolerate excessive profanity. I will not tolerate character assassinations. I will not tolerate ad hominem attacks. I will not tolerate gaslighting. I will not tolerate random insults. And coming on this show and just, you know, trying to disrupt the show without adding anything valuable to this program. If you think you want to involve yourself in any of those activities, I will advise you do not come on the show because I will be happy to oblige you and have you kicked off. I will push the kick button and you will go bye-bye, okay? I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me, but just be agreeable in your comments and your questions on this program. Well, folks, I'm going to change the script a little bit today. This is going to be a special edition of this program. I guess you can say get off the tracks on this one. And what I want to talk about today is something that we in the black community need to understand, because I think this is the number one reason why a lot of us in black society act the way we do. And it's also something, without trying to be preachy, it's also something that the church in this country has failed to address. And this is something that is millions of Americans go through in this country. Millions of us go through this. But yet and still, it doesn't get addressed properly. And a lot of us, we tend to look the other way when it goes on. We tend to acknowledge it with an air of indifference. And we just, you know, a lot of us act like we really don't care if someone is going through this. And what I wanted to talk about today was the issue of mental illness in this country. I remember a story. I was at a revival in a church here in Durham, North Carolina. I no longer attend this church because they seem to be indifferent to mental illness. But I was at this church, and they had a guest speaker from Goldsboro, North Carolina. And I know this man pretty well, know his church, been to his church and everything. And he related a story that occurred to him when I guess it was around the time he started preaching or whatever. I don't know. But it was several years back. And there was this young man who wanted to talk to him and explain things that were going on in his life. And this preacher didn't have time for him. Couldn't talk to him. Didn't want to talk to him or whatever. And he looks up one day and he discovers that this young man had committed suicide. And he said that has bothered him ever since. It's bothered him ever since. And, you know, he could have talked to the young man and, you know, he could have made some time for him. If he couldn't talk to him then, he probably could have said, hey there, sir, I can't talk to you now, but can you come back? I really want to discuss this with you. But instead, he pretty much blew the young man off, and the young man ended up committing suicide. Now, mental illness is something that a lot of people make a mockery of, so to speak. You know, when you talk about mental illness, a lot of times people think of deranged people going around, you know, laughing like evil scientists and flying around on their gliders like the Green Goblin or something like that. And they think that people who are going through mental illness are demon possessed and that, you know, they got a devil in them and that's why they got so much mental illness. And if you are of God, you're not supposed to be suffering with mental illness or anything of that sort. And if you're suffering through mental illness, you don't know your authority. You don't know. You really don't know the Lord. You got sin in your life, and this is the reason why you're going through mental illness. I've listened to preachers make fun of people who are going through things like PTSD and depression, and they, you know, I've heard preachers, you know, say, "Oh, you going through depression and PTSD? What is PTSD? How are you going through PTSD? You're supposed to be the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus." And they talk like, you know, you really don't know who you are. You're really not saved if you're going through mental illness. And the reason why I wanted to talk about mental illness today is because this is something I've had to go through my entire adult life, most of my childhood and my entire adult life. Now, a lot of you all might listen to me and y'all say, hey, this guy, he sounds like he's pretty sane. You know, a lot of things he talks about, he makes some good points and everything. I wouldn't imagine that Southeast Vince of Durham, North Carolina, is going through mental illness. But it is something I've dealt with for most of my life, since my childhood. And the reason why I don't discuss it much with people is because my experience with mental illness is that most people don't want to listen to you. Whether it be family, so-called friends, people in the church, they don't want to hear it. And they'll say things like, oh, you need to get over this. Oh, why are you still holding these things in your heart? Oh, you just feeble-minded. And when people brush you off with these terms a lot, they call it toxic positivity. You got to be positive. You know, you always got to be positive. Be positive. Be positive. And basically what they're saying is you got to think positive. You think positive thoughts, positive things are going to happen to you. And if negative things are happening to you, that means you are not thinking positive enough. You gotta send out positive vibes out into the ether, out into the atmosphere, into the universe. And if you speak enough positive things out there, then positive things will come back to you like a magnet. But here's the thing. Positive doesn't attract positive. Positive doesn't attract positive. And it is my experience that whenever you think positive, that does not mean positive things are going to happen to you. And a lot of people, especially people in the church, positive. You got to have positive thoughts 24/7. You got to have positive thoughts. Think positive. Come on, bro. Think positive. And when you tell them what you are going through, they don't want to listen. And people in the church, they'll blow you off and say, hey, bro, you supposed to be above that. You know, you're the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. Oh, you got the victory. Keep walking in that victory. Just keep walking in the victory. And while you're doing that, put on this little Jesus Band-Aid and everything will be all better. Now, folks, don't get me wrong. I am a born-again Christian. I am a Christian, but that does not mean I don't go through anything. And for those of you all out there who call yourselves Christians and think Christians are not supposed to go through anything, I have some sad news for you. You're going to go through, maybe even more so than if you weren't a Christian. And it is my belief that when Christians get to talking this, everything is positive and you got to be positive and you got to speak things into existence. You got to speak what you want to see happen in your atmosphere. Then these are the type of people that tend to brush you off when you tell them that you're going through something. And I think a lot of times when people look at Christians, let me say so-called Christians, because a lot of people call themselves Christians really are not. And I would dare say most people who call themselves Christians really are not. When they look at so-called Christian people and they hear this type of rhetoric from them, it tends to blow them off. And they're like, you know what? I don't want anything to do with this Christian thing. I don't want anything to do with it, because if this is how Christians act, then I don't want any part of this. And see, a lot of us, we act like because we are Christians that we don't go through anything. Oh, we are the soldiers in the army of the Lord. Oh, we're marching into battle and nothing seems to bother us. We're bulletproof. We're a soldier. We are an army of supermen. You know, you fire bullets at us and bullets bounce off of us. But all we are doing, we're not walking in authority. We are walking in denial. And if you're walking in denial, you're really lying to yourself. You're not being honest with yourself. You see what's going on, but you tend to ignore it. And you just brush it off as, oh, that's one of them negative things. Okay, I'm just going to ignore it. Oh, yeah, I'm the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. And if someone comes up to us and they're like, hey, I'm going through something. Oh, brother, how long are you going to go through this? A lot of us, we get a little tired because, you know, sometimes people, they're going through something, you know, after a while we look up and they come back to you with the same problem and say, oh, we get this thing, oh, I'm getting tired of this. Instead of following what the Bible says, to bear, the strong are supposed to bear the infirmities of the weak. Instead of saying, hey, bruh, I don't care how long you're going to go through this, I'm going to be right here every step of the way. But instead, they'll tell people, they'll brush them off, say, you are a soldier in the army of the Lord. Stick that chest out. Hold that head up and march into your victory. And all that does is make a person go into denial. Just because you are a Christian does not mean that you are not going to go through something. This is why I wanted to do this today. This is not my normal program or whatever. This is not what I usually talk about and everything. But if we would deal with the issue of mental illness and stop brushing it off, and start listening to people who are going through something, then maybe we can start to see some healing in our societies. Oh, Vincent, I thought you're on this show to talk about black people. Yeah, black people, they need to understand this too, because this is a serious situation that goes on in our black communities. We have an issue of mental health in our black communities. This is why this goes on. And let me tell you all something. It starts at home. It starts with your upbringing. And once again, a lot of people, they tend to brush it off. Frustrated with people who go through this, and basically the issue doesn't get solved. When you brush a person off and tell them, you know, oh, apply this scripture and put on this little Jesus Band-Aid, you're not dealing with the issue. And see, we in the church, we in the church tend to label anything that's negative as the devil. Anything that's negative going on in your life, the devil is behind it. The devil, you know, it's the devil. It's the devil. We blame everything on the devil. And don't get me wrong, the devil is the source of evil in this world today. Don't get me wrong. Let's not get this twisted. The devil is the source of what's evil in the world today. But we tend to label every sickness, every shortcoming, every loss, everything on the devil. I remember some years ago, we were outside of Winston-Salem in a place called Clemens, North Carolina. Clemens is where, I guess you say, the rich folk live. It's not too far from Winston-Salem. And we were playing basketball. And me and these brothers, we were playing basketball on a basketball court. And one of the players on the other team, he shot the basket. He went up for a shot and made the shot, but it was into the wrong basket. So that meant 2 points for us. Not them. And, you know, one of his teammates told him, hey, that's the wrong basket, dude. And so he's coming back up the court talking about, I bind that spirit of confusion. No, dude, when you hear people talk about, I bind this, I bind that and everything, they're talking about the devil. So the devil confused him so he could shoot into the wrong basket. That wasn't the devil. Even though it was a negative it was a negative occurrence, but that was not the devil. But we tend to label anything negative as being of the devil instead of being in the condition that the world is in today. When someone gets sick, we come and we pray for them. We say, I bind the spirit of sickness on this brother, on this sister. I bind the spirit of sickness. Sickness come out. And the sickness does come out eventually. Not because the devil left the person, but because the disease has run its course. Don't get me wrong, there are some sicknesses that are of the devil. But we think all sicknesses is of the devil. Like if someone catches a cold. Someone catches a cold, we're like, oh, that's the devil. We gotta, you know, pray that. You know, the preacher I used to be under, he used to say that, you know, you're not sick. You're just suffering from the symptoms. It's the devil trying to put sickness on you, but, you know, it's just the symptoms. So you need to bind that devil, and the symptoms will go away. Well, here's the problem I have with that. You are suffering from the symptoms. You're already going through the infection. You're already sick. So if you show symptoms of a cold, that doesn't mean that a cold is coming on you. It means the cold is already on you. Now, those symptoms might increase and whatever. And folks, once again, I'm not saying that God cannot heal you from a common cold. I'm not saying that. But we tend to say if a person has a cold, the flu, COVID-19, anything like that, oh, that is the devil. And a lot of these people who get sick, they are Christian people. So you're telling me a Christian person can get in, can get possessed of the devil? Now, nowhere in the Bible does it say that sickness is of the devil specifically. Doesn't say that. But getting back to mental illness, you know, a lot of times we say, oh, it's the devil attacking your mind. You got to bind that spirit up in your mind, you know, and you got to fight against it. And because we don't get proper therapy in this area, what a lot of us do, we just end up sweeping the proverbial dirt under the rug. Now you can still see, you can look around and say, oh, okay, there's no dirt. I can't see any dirt. It's been swept under the rug. It hasn't been properly disposed of. And you think because you don't see the dirt that you're not going to suffer the results of that dirt still being around. Oh, you can't see it. It's under the rug. You can see the lump on the rug and everything. You say the dirt is there. And eventually, there's going to be a consequence of all that dirt being swept up under the rug. You might invite dust mites into your place. You might get roaches or something like that and everything. And dirt, sweeping it into the dustpan, dumping it into the trash, taking the trash out to the curb, putting one of those receptacles and the garbage man come and pick it up. We really haven't gotten rid of the dirt. And my experience in the Word of Faith churches, now when I say Word of Faith churches, I'm not exactly talking about Christian churches, because a lot of Word of Faith churches, if you're in a church that's Word of Faith, these are these people that believe that sickness is of the devil. And you're not supposed to be sick. You're not supposed to be. You're not supposed to be unhealthy. You're not supposed to be. You're not supposed to be poor. You're supposed to be rich and all that. And you got to speak things into existence. You know, you got to speak your reality That is not a Christian church. Let me be straight. Let me be frank with you. Christianity is not based on a promise that you'll never be sick or poor ever again. That is not Christianity. You see these televangelists, they get on TV and they talk about, you know, no sickness. All this and everything, that is not Christianity, people. Because you live in a flesh and blood body, your body has not been redeemed. Your body has not been glorified. There are going to be times where you have sickness in your body. You're going to have ailments in your body. But sickness don't live in my body. I speak it by faith. You can speak it by faith all you want to. But you're going to be attacked by something. Now, let me tell you something. If sickness is not supposed to live in your body, are injuries supposed to live in your body? Because I've seen people talk about sickness don't live in my body, but they trip and fell, hit their head or something, and they had to get stitches. How come you got stitches? If sickness is not supposed to live in your body, injury is not supposed to live in your body either. y'all getting a taste of what I'm going to talk about on my True Sharks radio broadcast. And if you've come into the program and you saw the introduction, you saw the logo that I'm going to have for the True Sharks broadcast. Like I said before, the True Sharks broadcast is going to consist of Black by Color only and Profit or Loss. And Profit or Loss is the program where I talk about these doctrines in the Christian churches, so-called Christian churches, that are not biblical, but they are preached on like they are. Jesus came for one purpose, to seek and to save those that were lost. When Jesus died on the cross, now listen to me carefully. A lot of these preachers will tell you when Jesus died on the cross, he died for three things. He died for your salvation, he died for your health, and he died for your prosperity. And if you're not walking in all three of these principles, you're really not saved. That's what they'll teach you. But Jesus came to seek and to save those that were lost. Jesus was offered as a sacrifice for sins, not a sacrifice for your poverty, not a sin. And you don't see anywhere in the scriptures that Jesus died for your sicknesses and that he died for your prosperity. Well, the Bible says, by his stripes, we are healed. And see, that's the problem right there. People take a scripture. They'll cherry pick a scripture and they'll build a doctrine around it and say, oh, this right here says, by his stripes, we are healed. So that means we shouldn't be getting sick. That's not what that scripture is talking about. When it says by his stripes, what Jesus went through when he went to the crucifixion. When before Jesus was hung on that cross, he was beaten with a cat of nine tails. Now, I don't know if any of you all ever seen that movie, The Passion of the Christ. That is probably what Jesus went through more than likely. You know, a lot of times we see pictures of Jesus, he got a few wounds on his back and everything. They probably ripped Jesus apart. And when those wounds were made on his back, what came out of those wounds? The blood. The blood washes away our sins. Not our poverty and not our unhealthy conditions. Now, I'm not saying that Jesus can't make you rich and Jesus can't heal you. I'm not saying that. But that is not why he came to earth in the first place. He came to save us from our sins. And folks, like I said at the beginning of the show, I don't mean to sound preachy. This is not the way I usually go on this program, but I wanted to go in this direction because we have neglected a whole section of our society. We tend to blow them off because they're going through something mental like PTSD or depression or obsessive compulsive disorder or things like that. And we tend to brush these people off. We tend to look the other way. We tend to ignore them because we say, oh, this is something going on in their mind. So they automatically think it's the devil coming up and messing up their mind and everything. But your mental health is just as important as your physical health. And these folks will tell you, you shouldn't be going to a psychiatrist. You should be going into the church and getting prayed and all this and everything. But see, here's the problem I have with that. When the church people don't want to listen to you and they just want to brush you off, who are you going to talk to? Well, you know, y'all going over there spending all that hundreds of dollars on a psychiatrist. You can come here and get delivered for free. Wait a minute now. When you come to a church, especially these Word of Faith churches, it ain't free. It ain't free. I'm going to tell you right now, it is not free. You know why I say that? Because a lot of these Word of Faith churches, they are always pressing you for your money. 10%, and then on top of that, you got to pay an offering too, which is not biblical. What do you mean it ain't biblical? I know what the Bible says. It says pay your tithes and your offerings. Look at it again. You need to understand what a tithe is. And a lot of times people say a tithe is 10% of your income that you're supposed to be giving to the church. Show me anywhere in the Bible where it says you're supposed to give 10% of your income to a church. It doesn't say that. This is how these preachers get rich. They prey on your insecurities, and they throw these guilt trips at you, talking about, you know, when you go to church and you got a plan to take your family out to eat, they tell you, oh, why are you taking your family out to eat? You need to skip that and fast for the rest of the day and just give the money to the church. That's how they get rich, and they throw that guilt trip on you. You may have planned for a vacation for two years. Said, I'm going to save this money up and I'm going to take my family out for a vacation. Then here comes a preacher talking about why you going on a vacation when the church needs a new paint job or some new carpet. You need to cancel that vacation, save that money, and give it to the church. That's how they get rich, the guilt trip. I went to a church like that here in Durham, North Carolina for 26 years. And a lot of the blessings that they said would come on you, they never came on me. Never. Not one time. Paid tithes for 22 years. But those blessings that they said would come on me, they never came on me. I'm just telling y'all the truth. I'm telling you all my experience, my personal experience in Word Faith churches. And then if you came up with a problem or something, they'll tell you, oh, brother, you just need to walk by faith. But when it came time for them, for their little petty projects or whatever to come up, like they wanted a bigger building or they wanted new carpet or a new paint job or renovations to the church and everything, oh, you better give your money. You got money in your pocket, you better give it. But if you're going through a problem, you need to walk by faith. And see, some of these preachers, I want to tell them, they come up and say, hey, bro, we got to get some new carpet and all this and everything. Hey, won't you walk by faith? Walk by faith. You tell me to walk by faith. Hey, my electric bill is due. You say, oh, we're not going to pay for that. That's a luxury. Oh, okay. So your new carpet is a luxury too. So let me see you walk by faith. Went to this church, like I said, back 26, almost 30 years ago, they started building this place called, we have already moved into this 40,000 foot building, and then the pastor wanted to build a family life center because we got a basketball team, a fairly famous basketball team. Tracy McGrady played for the team before he went to the pros. And the pastor wanted to build a family life center, and so he builds this family life center. And he gets up there and he's telling, he says, okay, we got this family. Now, given nobody has them to build a family life center, he just figured God told him and that we're supposed to get in line with what God told him. We don't know if God told him or not, but he has this family life center and he calls people up every Sunday to help pay for this family life center. Now, given they are still paying for this family life center. This family life center, it was they began building it in 1997, and now they're still with this family life center. And what the pastor used to do, he would get people to line up around the sanctuary and hook arms as a show of unity. People, I'm not making this up. And if there are those of you all who went to this church and you know what I'm talking about, and you want to sit there and call me a liar, ain't nobody lying, because I went there. I remember what happened. Now, his goal was to have the whole outer wall without any gaps in this line. And if there were any gaps, he would look at the people who were sitting down and say, hey, some of you all, y'all could be up here. You could be paying but we didn't ask you for it in the first place. But he changed it over to having a double line and every Sunday. And from what I know, that they're still doing this. And I'm like, this was back in 1997. And he said the Lord told him to do this, but how come it isn't paid yet? Because I'm pretty sure if God told you to do it, God would have given you the means to pay for it without asking your congregation. And see, their faith is not in God, it's in their congregations. Folks, I'm still talking about mental illness, because it takes mental illness to get people to do this. And people are not thinking for themselves. And a lot of people look at this and say, this is why I don't want to be a Christian. But they don't realize what they're seeing from their televangelists or word of faith preachers is not Christian. It's not Christian. You don't go to a church so some preacher, some rinky-dink preacher can get up there and yell at you for your money. You got money, you got plans to do with that money, and he gets up there, he starts guilt-tripping you about going on vacation or going out to eat or spending time with your family. They'll even go so far to say, this is your family, this church is your family. No, dude, I planned for this vacation for 2 years. You're not going to guilt trip me out of my money. And see, the thing about them, when you go to a lot of these churches, I don't know why I'm off on this tangent, but when you go to a lot of these churches, they'll take up several offerings. Oh, we got a carpet offering. Oh, we got a light offering. Oh, we got this offering. We got that offering. We got out. How much money do you expect the people to have? Oh, some of you all can give $10,000. You wouldn't even miss it. How do you know that? And it's none of your business how much people put in the church. None of your cotton picking business. None of your cotton picking business how much a person puts in church. I remember one of the members, this was about 30 years ago, he bought a new van. He bought a new van, you know, for his family. And they were having this special, they have this yearly offering that you had to give a certain amount every year. And they called it Provision for the Vision, PV for short. And it was required of every member to give $500 a year. Now, at the time, this church had, I guess, upwards of 1,500 members. I don't know what, I'm not going to go into the calculation of what 1,500 times 500 is. But every member was required to give $500 a year. And This brother had bought a van for his family. He bought a new van. The pastor told him, said, okay, nice van, but did you give your provision for the vision? And the man hadn't. And so the pastor got on him, proceeded to get on him because he bought a new van, but he didn't pay his provision for the vision. And eventually the guy, because he was guilt-tripped, he got his $500 somehow. Now, and he came up with something called the evangelism seed, saying that now everybody was responsible to give $365 a year, a dollar a day. He would get up there and he would say, you know, you can afford a dollar a day. You can ask for it, you know, and everything. And if you didn't have your $365 at the end of the year, you were being unfaithful and whatever. So from 2009 to 2011, I was working as a substitute teacher for their academy. Once again, it's the same academy that people like Brandon Rush and Tracy McGrady and all them attended. Now, I didn't know these guys personally. I just know that they went there. But I was a teacher's assistant for 2 years, from 2009 to 2011. And when you work for a church like that, you're not going to get your paycheck like you do when you work for a regular job. And the pastor said, oh, well, the reason for that is when you work up here, you got to walk by faith. And there he goes again with that walk by faith stuff. But because we weren't getting paid, you know, normal or whatever, and I wasn't getting paid as much as I had been paid in other jobs, I was going through a little financial difficulty. So in 2011, this I think it was around February 2011, my wife used to work as a hostess at the church. And I was waiting for her at the end of church. She had to go get things put up and everything. We're going to go and do whatever. And so while I'm standing there at the front of the sanctuary. Here comes the pastor. Vincent, come here. Go. Did you pay your $360? I ought to fire you. Folks, I am not making this up. I ought to fire you. You could have had that money. You could have had that. No consideration about if I'm going through any financial difficulty or anything. All he knows was I could have had a dollar a day to give to the ministry. Now, does that sound like a type of church you should be going to? And eventually, in a couple of years, me and my wife, we stopped going there. Because I got tired of the, you know, the guilt tripping, the indifference, people not listening to you when you came to them with a problem. They asking you all these questions and everything, and you know they questioning your salvation because you're going through something mentally, you're going through depression, things like that. And I'm folks, I'm just sharing this with you all. Like I said, this is not the way I wanted to go today. But I think this needs to be shared. And it's not. And I'm not just here to talk about crooked churches or anything like that. I'm here to talk about mental illness. Because a lot of us go through things that we have gone through in our childhood. And people, they try to take advantage of your mentality. And I listen to these people. You know, when they get up there and say, you're not supposed to be going through this. You need to put that behind you. You need to learn to forgive. I've heard all the excuses. One of the excuses I heard was, you need to stop holding that in your heart. You're not walking in forgiveness. And I tell people, anyone who knows me knows I don't like pain. There was a while where I didn't like going to the doctor because I didn't like needles, because I associated needles with pain. Now, I've overcome that condition, but I still don't like pain. So you mean to tell me I would rather go through depression and everything because I want to hold this stuff in my heart? Let me tell you all, the most the worst pain you could ever feel is mental pain. Especially when it's delivered by somebody that you care about, like your family. Hey there, bring it, boy. When it's brought up on you by someone like your family members or a close friend or something like that, that hurts, and it usually hurts for a very long time. And people don't understand this. And sometimes it can get so traumatic, people actually go through what is called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. But the problem with that is you have a lot of people that make mockery of folks who go through these conditions. And they make a mockery of it. Like I said, you know, the preachers, they, oh, you going through depression. What are you doing going through depression? You're supposed to be a child of God. And I even heard people say, if you read the Bible every day, it's impossible for you to get depressed. Got news for you. I read the Bible every day. 2 chapters in the morning, 2 chapters in the evening. I read it every day. And I still had to fight depression. And let me, I want people to know that I'm vulnerable. I want people to let, I don't want people to know that, to think that I got everything going on. I got it going on. You know, you hear me on this program and, you know, I say this stuff and, you know, and you're like, oh man, this is, he's got it together. Not all the time. Because I'm still dealing with things that occurred in my childhood. And the reason why I'm still going through those things is not because I'm trying to hold it in my heart or any, you know, people say that. The reason why I'm still going through it is because I haven't gotten proper therapy for those things that I've been through. Because I was a part of a church that said you're not supposed to be going to a psychiatrist because psychiatrists are akin to witches and warlocks. Folks, I'm not making this up. And I've had to deal with toxic people through my childhood now and everything. And a lot of times when you share what you've gone through in your childhood, they say, well, why you still remember this and everything? And they act like you're the bad guy. You're the reason why you're still going through. Nobody says anything about the people who initiated the mental illness or anything like that. It's your problem. It's your problem. I grew up in a household where you couldn't make mistakes. I grew up in a household, even though we went to church every Sunday, it wasn't a Christian household. I grew up with a toxic father and a toxic mother. And if they told you something one time, they expected you to get it that first time. And if you didn't get it that first time, that meant you weren't listening or, you know, you're stupid. You ain't got no common sense. And me being the oldest child, let me tell you all something. I was the oldest child. I was the oldest child. I was firstborn of my mom and dad. My brother, you know, he came 2 years later, and then we adopted a girl who was born in 1973. The oldest child is the one that gets it the roughest. Or let me just say, in my case, I was the one that got it the roughest because you're the first child. They have very high expectations of you. They expect you, oh, he's a strapping boy. Look at how tall he's getting. He can play basketball. He can be, you know, he can be involved in sports and everything. But I wasn't any of those type of people. I wasn't athletic. I sucked as an athlete. I can play some sports, but I was not an athlete. I could not play basketball. Even though I was very tall, probably the tallest person. I was the tallest person in most of my classes, but I was not good at basketball. I can play football a little bit because I used to love to catch and run and hit people and stuff like that, but I wasn't really all that talented in that either. But a lot of parents have certain expectations of their children. And if those children don't meet those expectations, something is wrong with that child. Like my dad would used to shake his head and be like, Mr. can't play. He can't play no basketball. My dad couldn't play basketball either. I remember we played on a baseball team and I sucked. We played on a baseball team in 1981. And all that year, my batting average was 0.000. I did end up making it on base, made it all the way to home plate. But as far as my hit record, I was terrible. And my dad used to shake his head. That boy, he could, you know. But one day, the company he worked for Pepco, Potomac Electric Power Company in Washington, D.C. And he was on a team with the company. He was on the company's team. And me and my brother asked him, said, can we go watch you play? You know, he kind of just brushed it off because I'm pretty much thinking that he wasn't that good either. And he didn't want his sons to see that he sucked at baseball too. But we could not make a mistake in the Brown household. We could not make a mistake. If they said, if they told you one time, this is how you do this, then they this caused some anxiety in me. Like if my dad told me to do something and I didn't get it the first time, he would go upside your head, berate you, call you stupid, you ain't going to be worth nothing. My mom, too. I think most of the verbal abuse came from my mom. Me and my brother would be riding with her to the grocery store or something. And all along the trip, she's just talking about how bad we were. We were the worst kids ever. Other kids in the neighborhood, they weren't bad kids. The only kids that were bad were me and my brother and eventually my sister. We were the worst kids ever. No other parents had to get on their kids about cleaning up their room. No other parents had to get on the kids about making good grades or anything. You know, we were the only ones that were like that. And I used to see this, how my parents used to treat other kids compared to us. And I grew up in that type of atmosphere. And after a while, it got to the point where I started internalizing that stuff, started calling myself stupid, started saying I'm not worth anything. And then when you tell people about how your parents are treating you, they would take the parent's side and not your side. Oh, your parents love you. It's just their best way of showing their love to you. But I guarantee you, if somebody else had treated them the way I had been treated, they wouldn't have liked it. So don't give me this thing that they didn't know any better or anything like that, because I can guarantee you, if they had been treated the same way me, my brother, and my sister were treated, they wouldn't have liked it. And because I wasn't the person that they wanted me to turn out to be, all the favoritism went to my younger brother. Because my younger brother, he was one of the, you know, he was a go-getter. He was fixing stuff and, you know, he was showing, he seemed to be more athletic. And they were like, yeah, he's going places. Vincent, oh, he ain't going nowhere. Because I didn't want to be a part of anything. When I went to high school, I was not part of one group in high school. I didn't join the singing club. I didn't join the chess club. I didn't join sports teams or anything. I just wanted to get out of high school because all I looked forward to was getting out of the Washington, D.C. area. That's all I looked forward to. I remember my mom was telling my dad, they were in an argument, heated argument. And my mom said, well, you need to understand, you know, you should be glad that Vincent doesn't go out and get in trouble or anything like that. My dad told her, said, well, I wish he would do something. And I remember overhearing him on the phone. Someone asked him, well, where does Vincent want to go to college? He said, well, I'd like Vincent to go to college at Prince George's Community College and go to Maryland University. And I'm sitting there listening to it. I was like, I ain't staying around here. And I grew up hating my dad. I grew up hating him. I couldn't stand him. Now, I can say that now because I don't hate him now. I haven't hated my dad in 30-something years since I became a Christian. But even though I hated my dad more than anybody, most of the abuse came through my mom. Most of the physical and the verbal abuse came from my mom. My dad might have been a little brutal with it because at one time we became teenagers, my dad switched from the belt and started beating me and my brother with a plunger handle. He broke two plunger handles on my left arm. Thank goodness I had a sweater on because he probably could have broken my arm. But he broke two plunger handles on my arm. And I was so scared of him. I said, if he beats me with that plunger again, I'm calling the police. He did it again. I didn't call the police because I was so scared of him. This is not the conditions a child should be growing up in. I'm just talking to you. I'm just talking, folks. And there might be those of you all out there who are parents and y'all just treat your kids any old kind of way. You need to understand your child is your most precious natural resource. Your children are not put on this planet to make you proud. Of course, they're going to do things. You're going to be like, oh, man, I'm so blessed to have you as a child, whatever, stuff like that. But they're not put on the earth to make you proud. They are put on the earth so you can teach them and they're not your punching bags, even though I'm not against spanking. I'm not against spanking. I'm against some of the, you know, other extracurricular activities parents do. You know, going upside your child's head and smacking them and everything. Nah, parents should be doing that. You might disagree with me. That's okay. You might disagree with me. But I do believe in spanking. I do believe in that. But once you spank them, that should be it. Boom. Some parents stay mad at their kids for a month because they brought home an F. Stuff like that, you know. But I grew up in a toxic, with a toxic family, very toxic. And getting away from them, the damage had already been done. Because when I came here to Durham, North Carolina, I was like, oh, I'm safe here and everything and stuff like that. But I would go home. And by the time I became a college student, my parents had divorced. And I was staying with my mom. And things didn't get better. Things didn't get better. 1986, I went to North Carolina Central University and came home in the summer of 87. And we had a situation where my parents, well, my mom and my younger brother, they ganged up on me, beat me down and everything. And they called the police on me and had me kicked out of my home. And that was when I made the decision. I'm staying in Durham, North Carolina. Well, basically, I made a decision a year later because a year later, I was supposed to go back to D.C. And I'll tell you what happened after that. I'll tell you everything else that happened when we get done with our advertisements. You are listening to Black by Color only on CN Radio.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
All right. Welcome back to the show. If you would like to be a guest or call into the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284, 646-478-5284. And basically what I'm talking about today is mental illness. This is not the direction I wanted this show to go into today, but I think it's something that needs to be addressed because this seems to be a topic that a lot of people tend to ignore or they're indifferent about or whatever. And before I left, I was talking about in 1987, I was supposed to go back home to Washington, D.C. Not 1987, 1988. 1987 was probably one of the worst summers of my life because my mom and my brother had, after they ganged up on me and everything, they called the police, kicked me out and everything. And it was something we could have really discussed, we could have talked about. But once again, I was the bad guy. And so 1988 comes around and everyone's expecting me to come home. Somehow me and my mom, I wouldn't say we reconciled. It was like, once again, everything got swept under the dirt. Hey, don't say nothing, won't be nothing, you know, things like that. And the day before I was supposed to go back home, I decided I'm going to stay in Durham. So the next day, my folks are expecting me to be back. And I called them and told them I'm staying in Durham. I was 19 years old. I said, I'm staying in Durham. And they were like, well, what do you mean you're staying in Durham? I said, I'm staying here in Durham. Because I got to thinking about the previous year. And I said, I'm not going through that again. And because people thought that I couldn't think for myself, they assumed that the church I was going to, the church that I mentioned before, I started going there past couple of years, and they assumed that the church had influenced my decision. They would say, oh, that church told him to stay in Durham. The church didn't tell me anything. It was 100% my mind made up, I'm not going back to D.C. And sometime later, I became a staff member of what they called missionaries at this church for 3 years. And then they came up with another rumor that the church told me to quit school to become a missionary, which I didn't quit school. School quit me because I didn't have any money. And my folks weren't paying anything. And they were like, well, that church told him to quit school so he could get involved with that church. No, they didn't. And I had an uncle in Roanoke, Virginia. Roanoke, Virginia is my hometown where I grew up. Well, not where I grew up, but it was where I was born. And my uncle had to get people straight and tell them, y'all need to leave Vincent alone. Because Vincent's doing good. He ain't asked y'all for a GD thing. That's a word I don't say anymore because I'm a Christian. But he said, Vincent ain't asked y'all for a GD thing. And y'all need to leave him alone because he's doing good. Now, here I am. I've been on my own since I've been 19 years old. My dad said Vince is going to be hanging around the house till he's 40 because he can't think for himself. You know, he ain't going to be able to make it on his own. Now, he was only off by 21 years. I mean, give him some credit.
He was only off by 21 years. But he said, he even laughed at me. He said, Benson, you're going to be around here until you're 40 years old. And my mentality was, I didn't say it out loud because my dad would have, you know, probably would have ripped my throat off and sucked the blood out my neck. But my mentality was, keep thinking that, old man. And if there's anybody I'm going to stay with until I'm 40, it's not going to be you. People were thinking that the church influenced my decision, that the church told me to quit school, but nobody ever came and talked to me about it. Nobody talked to me. And even today, if I talk to certain members of my family and tell them the church didn't tell me to quit, they'll still assume, they'll still insist, no, it was the church that told you to quit school. I couldn't go. What was I supposed to do? I wasn't getting no money or anything. So how in the world was I going to go to school? And y'all weren't paying anything. Y'all weren't giving me no funds. I wasn't getting no funds from y'all. So how was I supposed to go to school? But this is what you call a toxic atmosphere, toxic family. And I grew up in that type of stuff. And it led to a lifetime of mental illness with me. Now, a lot of times when you call yourself a Christian, you don't want to tell people that you're going through certain things because you want to put on this facade that, oh, I'm bold and I'm strong. And they say you're depressed, something is wrong with you. You know, some people even think that you got a little feminine spirit in you because you're going through depression. And if you're a man, oh my goodness, how can you call yourself a man and you're depressed? Wow. You know, and that's how they tend to brush you off. Now my mom and I we still get along and whatever, but see, there's gonna have to come a day where I had to discuss to her a lot of things that you did. When I was coming up, it really hurt me, and it hurts me to this day. Now, the person that she had the favor for, my brother does totally turn against her. And my mom even sent me a message. She sent me something in her diary, an entry in her diary. She said, you know what? Every time I go through something, who's always there? Vincent is always there. My other son has left me, my adopted daughter, she's left me, but every time I go through something, Vincent is always there. When my sister, which is my aunt, my mom's sister, when she passed away in 2016, I was there. My brother and sister weren't. When her second husband, my stepdad, passed away in 2014, I was the only one there. My brother wasn't there. Now, I'm wondering if my mom is kind of, you know, kind of like, well, oh, my goodness, I treated Vincent this way. And now, part of me tells me, why did you even stay with them? Because they were so toxic. And every time I would come back, you know, it was like, okay, everything's good, yada, yada, yada. But everything was not good. And right now, everything is good with, you know, my mom loves my wife. They love my wife. And I'm just wondering if it's still something under there that my mom is not revealing. Because I really do believe there's going to have to come a time where I say, Mom, we need to sit down and talk. And discuss some things. Because I try to give my mother some hints about what I'm going through. And see, I'm the type of person, I don't like throwing things up in people's faces. But there's some things I'm still going through because of what my mom did and said to me to this day. And the reason why it's still going on today, because I didn't get proper therapy, because I was told that you go to a psychiatrist, that is wrong, because psychiatrists ain't nothing but witches. Before you come into their office, they probably got a room where they're stirring a brew big cauldron with a brew in it. They probably stirring it with a broom or something. But it's going to have to come a day, you know, where I have to, you know, and I don't look forward to that day because I don't know if my mom's going to go into denial or she's going to start her old stuff again. You know, right now she and I, we got a good relationship. Like I said, she loves my wife. She even tells me that she's proud of me and, you know, yada, yada, yada. She even went so far to say, Vincent, I think the only person who should really be mad at me is you. She even told me that a couple of years ago. She told me, she said, if anybody needs to be mad, Vincent, you should be mad. And in a way, I am. But it's not a hatred. It's not a hatred type of thing. It's not because I don't want to forgive. You know, to those of you, once again, to those of you all out there who call yourselves Christians and someone is sharing something with you that happened in their past, don't throw it in their face that, oh, you don't know how to forgive. That's stupid. Don't do that to people. Listen to what they have to say. And see, that's the problem that I've gone through with people is people don't want to listen. They always want to, they want you to hear what they have to say, but they don't want to hear what you have to say. They'll cut you off. They'll offer their little advice. And when you try to speak, no, brother, I know what you're about to say. Don't say it. You know, because like I said, here in the church, in a lot of churches, they tell you, don't speak that. If you speak it, it's going to happen. Well, what happens when it does happen and I didn't speak it? Because I've told people of things that have happened and they'll say, see, you spoke it. I didn't speak anything. It already happened. I'm just relating to you something that happened last year or something like that. I didn't speak it. Because we have a false notion in the church that the only negative thing that happens to you is because of what you speak. Positive things aren't happening to you because you're not speaking positive. And instead of listening to people and having a compassionate heart and helping them go through their problems, we sit there and we berate them. We mock them. We basically make them feel less than human. And then you have a result of what I explained earlier in this program with the pastor and the young man who ended up committing suicide. And then they'll sit there, and when the person commits suicide, oh, he should have been stronger than that. He should have been strong. No, you should have listened to him. Now, the pastor that I mentioned earlier from Goldsboro who said that, he didn't go off into, oh, well, he should have listened. It struck him. It was like, you know what? I just looked up one day and he had committed suicide. And he said that thing bothers him to this very day. But a lot of preachers aren't like this, Pastor. They'll sit there and make fun of people who commit suicide without realizing, hey, maybe I contributed to this. Maybe I didn't listen. He wanted to listen. He wanted to talk, but I kept throwing scriptures in his face. He wanted to talk, but I kept throwing talking points in his face. I remember, and some of you all will probably look at me kind of funny when I mention this. I was watching this animated Marvel cartoon, and it was a team up of the Hulk and Iron Man. And Iron Man and Hulk, they had a little tiff going on and whatever. And about the end of this cartoon, you know, Iron Man was still having his prejudices against the Hulk. And the Hulk said, see, Tony, that's the problem with you. You don't listen. That's the problem with a lot of church people. That's the problem with a lot of, I guess you could say well-meaning people, but if they were really well-meaning, they'd be listening to you. They don't listen. They don't want to listen. They ain't got the time of the day. I ain't got no time for this because, you know, look, throw on this Jesus Band-Aid and you'll be fine. But the Bible says the strong should bear the infirmities of the weak. But a lot of these people, they don't want to bear up nothing. They'll tell you, you need something, brother. I'm here. And then when you're in need, they ain't got no time for you. I meant when I had time for your need, but right now I ain't got the time for this because I want to watch UNC play Duke. Or I wanted to go to Baskin-Robbins and get me some ice cream, but they ain't got time to talk to you. And they wonder why people still go through things like this. You come up in their prayer line several times and they're like, bro, you need to stop coming to this prayer line. You know, it seems like we're their adulthood because they didn't get proper therapy. And it's a shame to me. Really, I would love to get for someone in the church to listen to me because when you go to a psychiatrist, you got to pay for that. But at least they'll listen. And I hope there are church people in this listening right now, whether it's live or in the archives. I hope you're listening, and I hope you're listening well. When someone comes up to you with a problem or something like that, don't just brush them off and tell them, oh, you're the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. Stick your chest out. Put your head up. March into your victory and all that crazy mess. Listen to them. Don't just cut them off. Don't just cut them off like that because you're adding to the problem. And you want to get up there and talk about, so many people, percentage of people going through mental illness. Yeah, and a big part of that problem are church folks. Church folks and family members. And family members who are church folks. Instead of saying, hey, bro, you don't have to walk alone. I'm going to walk this with you. Just the mere fact that these people know somebody is walking with them will help alleviate a lot of the mental illness. Instead of you just coming up and berating them and upbraiding them because they have a mental illness and saying that they got the devil in them and all that crazy mess. Cut that mess out. I hope you all are listening. Really hope you all, and especially those of you all, you got young children and whatever. When he brings home an F, don't be beating them all upside the head and everything because you think you're going to live your life through your child. You think your child was placed on earth to make you proud. Oh, yeah, that's my child. Look at those good grades. He got that from me. No. I didn't make the good grades when I was coming up in school. Fifth grade was my worst year in school, fifth grade, 1978 to 1979. That was my worst year in school. And I wouldn't do my work. And my parents, late 1978 into 1979 was the worst period of school in my life. And I remember going into the end of the school year. I got tired of the mess, and I said, "You know what? I'm going to do my schoolwork. I'm going to get my work done. I'm going to get my work done. I want my parents to be proud of me. I'm going to get my work done. I'm going to do my homework." Oh boy, I chose the wrong day to say that because I brought home some homework, and I was never really good at math. I was never really good at math, and I had to do some division problems. And y'all know the division problems I'm talking about, the division problems where one number doesn't exactly divide evenly into the other one, and you had the remainder of 1, 2, or 4 or something like that. You know what I'm talking about. Oh, man, that was, oh, gosh. I brought those home one day, and I was like, okay, I finished my homework, showed it to my dad. My dad said, Vincent, all these are wrong. Do it again. And I kept getting my problems wrong. And the more I got them wrong, the more frustrated he got. Till the point that night I hadn't finished my homework, I still got my homework wrong. Took me into the bedroom, and I really seriously believed I was going to die that night. He took me, threw me around, shook me, you know. My mom sent a letter to the teacher. I never read the letter, but she probably said, we had a little trouble with Vincent, you know, can you see if he can do his homework, you know, help him with it, you know. Whatever. She probably said something to let it know that, oh, we're so concerned. But I was verbally and physically abused, and I knew I was going to die that night. I knew it. I just knew it. I said, oh, man, I'm going to die. I'm going to lay on the bed. My mom's going to come in, and she's going to have a fit because her husband done killed her oldest son. And from that time on, if the work was hard or whatever, I just did enough to get by. Because it didn't matter if I did the work or not. If I didn't do the work, got the same treatment. If I did the work and it was wrong, got the same treatment. So it was like I'm between a rock and a hard place. And it caused a lot of frustration in me. Some of that frustration, I see it in me to this very day. Whenever I do something wrong, I internalize it and beat myself over the head because I can't get it right. To this day, that's why I say it starts at home. Parents, so what? Your child doesn't get their math work right, okay? So what? They're still your child. And they're not your punching bag. Verbally or physically. But like I said, most of the physical and mental abuse came from my mom, not my dad. My dad was just more brutal with it. But my mom, it was almost every day she would get on me and my brother. Even though she had more favor towards my brother, he got it too. These stupid kids of mine. I bet nobody else goes through what we go through. I bet no other parents have to get on their kids about cleaning up their room or making good grades or whatever, you know. And if another child told a lie on us, they would believe that child before they would believe us. And it got to a point where I started talking back to my mom. Because I knew I was stronger than my mom. It came to a point where I knew I was stronger than she was. And I remember one time she come in and she was just berating me and my brother. And I stood up with my fist balled up. She was like, what is your problem? What are you doing balling your fists up at me? I didn't say a thing. I just looked right at her. Because I had gotten to the point where I had enough. I didn't do it with my dad because my dad, well, let's just say he could rip my head off and use it as a basketball. So I took it out on my mom. Do I regret taking it out on my mom? Yes, I do 100%. Because I never would have, I honestly believe I never would have talked back to my mom if she had never berated me. Never would have. But I felt like I had to defend myself. And let me tell you all something. No child, regardless of the circumstances, should be talking back to their parents. No child. But you have to understand, if a child is talking back to their parents, Most of the time, yes, the child is being rebellious, but it's not all the time. And I wasn't talking back because I was being rebellious. I was talking back because I got tired of being berated down, beaten down and whatever. And I was trying to defend myself the best way I could. So I started talking back. And I regret it to this day. I regret it to this very day. But this is what happens when you grow up in a toxic household like I did. Like I said, we went to church every Sunday. We were Catholics. You know, Catholics are not Christians. You know, I can tell you that, you know. They're not Christians, but we went to church every week, but I did not grow up in a Christian household. And I always longed for the day when I would leave, when I become an adult, if I live to be that long, you know. That's why when my birthday comes around, it's a celebration to me, and I don't care if anyone celebrates with me or not, or gives me a gift or whatever, you know, because you got some people, they got an attitude problem. Someone doesn't give them a gift for their birthday. So what? That's my day. And that's why I look at that day and I'm like, oh, this is a celebration for me, because I didn't think I'd live to see my 50s. I didn't think I would live out of my childhood, because I was like, I'll probably get killed by one of my parents. And I remember my aunt, one of the things, when you go to college, get out, get away from home, get away. And when she told me that, I was just thinking like, oh, where can I go to college? Georgia? Or I'm not familiar with Georgia. I can go to North Carolina. I got family in North Carolina. And I wanted to end up in Florida. Florida is my favorite state. I love Florida. But North Carolina was more attractive to me. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go to North Carolina. Somehow I'm going to, you know. My dad wanted me to stay in Prince George's County, which is right outside of Washington, D.C. It's in southern Maryland. But I was like, I want to get away from you guys. That was one bit of advice I took from my aunt. And I said, you know what? I'm getting away from home. And people even asked me, said, Vincent, how did you end up in North Carolina? I said, I really came down here to go to school. But I wanted to get away from home. I remember August the 17th, 1986, was a Sunday when I first came to Durham, North Carolina. And I was looking around. I was like, I wonder if I can make this place my home. 2 years later, Durham, North Carolina was home and has been home ever since. I've lived here for 34 years, and I don't have one regret staying down here. But you had people lying, saying, oh, the church told them to stay down there, and, you know, they told them to quit school and stuff like that. But none of these people ever came to me and said, Vincent, let's talk. You know, why'd you stay in Durham, North Carolina? No one ever, you know, came to me like that. They assumed something, and they just went with that assumption. But to this day, but by the time I, you know, started living here in Durham, North Carolina, the damage had already been done. No person I hated more than anyone than my dad. Hated my dad with a passion. I remember back in 1979, fifth grade, my dad, I was so glad he had to go to Chicago. And I was so glad he went to Chicago. I was like, yes, good, bye. And the next day, we had one of the biggest snows in D.C. history. Almost 2 feet of snow. I've never seen so much snow in my life. And I heard about a theater up in Chicago that had so much snow on the roof that it collapsed. And I was actually hoping my dad was in there and ended up being one of those people that got killed. That's how much I hated him. That is how much I hated him. And why I didn't direct that hate at my mom, I don't know why, but I'm glad I didn't. You know, I don't like the thought that I ever hated anybody. I don't like that fact. Because I'm not a hateful person. I don't hate anybody. To this day, there's not one person I hate. There are people that I look at them kind of sideways and, you know, I might not trust them, but I don't hate anybody. And if I don't have anything to do with somebody, it doesn't mean I hate them. It just means you're toxic. And if I known things back then that I would have spoken to again because they were so toxic. I had to deal with a toxic family member on my wife's side a few years ago. And I look at myself and I say, I should have dealt with people in my family the same way. Because my wife got a toxic family member, and we just cut her off. Because it was like, nah, you're not going to be disrespecting my wife. Nope. Mm-mm. And I had a family member, my own family member, a few years ago. We were at a family reunion, and he disrespected me. My wife did not like it. And she's like, I'm not going to another family reunion. You can go. She said, she told me, you can go, but I'm not going. And I think my wife made the right decision. Now, I say all that to say this, that eventually I'm going to get professional help to deal with this because I didn't get proper therapy or proper help coming up. The church didn't help. Family members didn't help. You know, people always taking the side of my parents. I tell people a story that happened in, I think, September or October of 1975. My mom got so frustrated with me, she cracked me over the head with a wooden loafer. And I had to get stitches. But she told me to tell everybody that I tripped over a chair and hit my head on a table. And I remember coming home that night and my dad looking at me like that clumsy boy, that stupid boy. And to this day, my dad still believes that I tripped over a chair and hit my head on a table. My mom told me to lie. But I was in trouble that night because I was lying. And I would hear my mom talk about I was going to hell because of my lying. Years afterwards, she would tell me, oh, you going to hell because of that lying. But, and I didn't realize all this until I became. And a lot of people think she's an angel. But like I said, I got a good relationship going on with my mom right now, but I just wonder if something is lying just underneath the surface. But anyway, I know I've done a lot of talking, and let me do this. I only got half an hour, but let me release the fruit bats. All right, that's my fruit bat alarm. And if you're on the phones and you want to engage in disrupting this program with straw man arguments and trolling and ad hominem attacks, character assassinations, excessive profanity, things like that, I'm going to tell you right now, if you're on the phone, you best hang up now, because if you involve yourself in any of those activities, I'm going to be happy to oblige you. But having said all that, let me go to the phones. Hello, welcome to the show.
What do you say, Vincent?
What's cracking, Pianchi?
Well, listening to you, somebody was cracking at you, man. But other than that, same old thing. But interesting narrative you made mention of. Hopefully everything's cool. But people always have life experiences that's peculiar to them. And nobody else have a slice right there. But they're human beings. Human beings. You know, you mentioned about God. Man has always had a fear or couldn't explain what it was that they was witnessing and observing, so they associated with God. Until they became more knowledgeable to it, then they took the responsibility themselves.
Yeah.
And it's good for people to have that moral and have that fear, for if you do something immoral, the potential punishment that can result. Because that kind of keeps men and women, humankind, into a mode of self-respect and caring. Because without it, oh, where would you be? So I don't argue with people about what their beliefs is unless it's particular on that. And you never try to take a person's fear, their beliefs that counters their fears, because that's something that they have personally. They became personally accustomed to and rely on and comfortable with. People pray over food. And they do it because they have been acclimated into it at one time or another. And they come to believe that it's a way of protecting them from the unknown, because you never know, you might choke while you're eating.
Yeah.
So other than that, we have to deal with that other fruit back, Irondale. I don't know where he's at.
You gotta kind of watch him.
Yeah, you got to keep an eye out on him.
Yeah, he told me, he said, Vincent, I don't like it whenever I got somebody else on the phone, y'all always ganging up on me. But he knows we don't mean anything about it. We're just joking around.
Yeah.
He knows that. Yeah, he understands that.
Yeah, I notice when we be flying around in one direction, he's going the opposite. We be flying in a circle clockwise. He's going counterclockwise. I guess that's this. He came from the fruit bad portion of the town, other than where I came from, and the most of us.
Well, those are the people I admire the most, the ones that do. I admire.
Yeah, your conversation drops off blank. For about 3 seconds every now and then.
Oh, really?
What it is. But it's all right. We can deal with it. We can play the hand we have.
Oh, yeah.
And go with that. So, anyway, I don't have too much to talk about.
But I appreciate...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just appreciate people listening, because a lot of times something like mental health and whatever, people tend to keep it to themselves, because a lot of people will berate them and tear them down and say, well, you shouldn't be going through this. And especially me being a man, you know, we men ain't supposed to be going through this, you know, because we're men and, you know, we're strong and we got to have a strong mentality or else you're not a man, you know. And I just want people to listen. And nowhere does it say that because you're a man, you're not going to go through things. You're not going to go through a mental illness or whatever. I mean, heck, just look at our world around. Just look around our world today. You know, a lot of things going on because men got mental illness. Now, I'm not the type of person that's going to go and shoot up a school or something like that and just go crazy. And you know, hurt a bunch of people. But look at what we got going on today. And it's a lot of men are mentally depressed. And people don't understand that.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't,
from the attorney
and I don't
general,
understand why people don't understand that.
To the attorney general down to your representative, they got some mental problems. Garland's
yeah.
got mental problems.
I mean, for real.
Yeah. And Cheney's got mental problems. You know, Waters and all of them got mental problems, seemingly.
Exactly.
Anytime you want to take something away from somebody and give the other, that's a mental problem. Joe Biden and these student loans, that's a mental
yeah.
problem.
Oh, God.
And the
students
that get up into over $100,000 for a job that's going to pay them about 31, 32, something's wrong with them.
Yeah.
And then the people that allow that to go on, something wrong with them, too.
Yeah.
So you're living in a ball of confusion.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Let me get this second caller. Yeah, let me get this second caller on here.
Let me duck down over here. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. As if I don't know who this is.
Yeah, and I got a whole lot of things to say. And I just want to say, Vincent, you can call me Ira though, but that knucklehead, I can't stand him. Want to go upside his head and cut him a million different ways. My name is Mr. Harris to you, sir. Oh, the cat got your tongue? You talking all that smack when I couldn't get on there? Okay.
Well, I'm hiding under the bed. I can't move too much.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say something with you. I already see you underneath the bed because I put cameras in all your locations. So every little hiding point, you might as well forget it. This is a new sheriff in town, and I'm gunning for you, okay, sir?
Okay, Sheriff, other than that, what's going on this week for you? You have a good week?
right now I want to talk more about you because you talked a lot of smack. I'll change the conversation when I want to because I'm ruling the main thing.
But you know you
now,
only got so much air in it.
The next time you call me Spook Bat,
you the
be
one
the
said
one
you were Spook Bat number one. Didn't he, Vincent?
Yeah,
no,
Spook Bat
no,
number one,
no,
Spook Bat number two.
you know what? I'm going to hang up on both of y'all, Trump. Trump one and Trump two. That's all I got to say.
But, let me get this.
But you know, men got feelings like women, okay? Funerals, they cry. Other things, they cry. You know, and I don't see nothing wrong with a man crying. He's still a man as far as I'm concerned, because he's still a human being. And a lot of stuff you mentioned on it, I already know about it. That's why I said the little things you do, it might be huge to the other person, but real small to you. But the little thing you do could cause that person from committing suicide. Because suicide is real. And it ain't just Thanksgiving and Christmas now. It's like it's year-round now.
Yeah.
We need to take heed to it. I mean, I found out today from a friend of mine. This was a young kid bullied in school, and the young lady wanted to go with her mother and say, look, can you put me out of school? I said, give me a couple of weeks, I'll work on it. She committed suicide for a mother to get out of that school because kids was bullying her. Stuff like that. So suicide is real. Suicide is real. And I'm going to tell you what, we live in a very selfish society, very selfish. It's all about them. Listen, know this guy, please act right. Yeah, like it sounds just like me. If a man is talking to you, Vincent, and you cut him off and start, and what he's going to do, he's going to shut up and be quiet and shut down. And that sounds just like me. Then you wonder why I'm saying nothing. Well, we can all sing together, but we can't all talk together. I got a few other things to say, but I'm going to leave it on loan because I know Vincent ain't got about 5 seconds left on the program.
Okay, let me get this other caller on here because I got somebody else. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, 909-732.
Yes, hi, Vincent. It's Suzette. How are you? Well, I know how you are. I just want to say.
I'm trying to clean up food bed, and now you come on here talking food bed. Oh, Lord. What am I going to do with all of you?
I just want to say thank you for sharing. You know, what you talked about today, people, there are a lot of people going through things, and much, you know, like you. And then in many other ways, and you, like you said, they'll be stigmatized if they talk about it. So they keep it inside. Once they keep it inside, then your head starts, you know, spinning in circles, and then these contemplations, and then your body starts releasing bad chemicals, and then you, you know, that's kind of the way you're going because you can't talk to anybody. I know because I was there, and I did get help, professional help. And one thing I did learn is, I wouldn't be the person that I am today if it wasn't for what I went through. If it wasn't for what my parents did and how they were, I wouldn't be the person that I am today and the mother that I am today. So that was hard to accept as far as true. That's true. But that sucks. And how would it be if I didn't go through that? So what are you saying, Doc? You know? And but it's true. So that's part of the way as far as healing goes once you recognize that. Because if you are a good dad, a good husband, you know, you, good job, you do what you got to do to live the life that you want your children to live, that you want to live, that you want to provide for your family.
Exactly.
And not to go through, not to go through what you went through. So I just wanted to say that as far as once you recognize that, that's a good thing. Also, I want to ask you a question. You talk about hopefully, but you don't think it will happen, but hopefully one day you'll be able to sit down with your mom and talk to her about these things. Have you thought about what if that day doesn't come? How will you deal with that?
Yeah, and it's a day I hope never comes out. Because my mom is, she'll be 76 the day after Christmas, and see, I'm the type of person, I don't like throwing things up in people's faces, but it's probably something I'm going to have to talk to her about, even though we have a good relationship going on right now, because it's a lot of unresolved stuff going on there because I never sat down and talked to her about how much hurt I went through, and one of my fears is that she won't listen. That's one of my biggest fears, is that she'll be like, oh, you know, you didn't. And even though we have a good relationship right now, I don't know what's lying underneath the surface. But whether I know that or not, there's going to have to come a day of reckoning, really. And if she passes away before I let her know, what happened or whatever, I don't know how I'm going to handle that. I really don't. I don't know how that's going to be handled. But it's a day I don't want to look forward to.
I think you deserve that day, personally. I think that reckoning is almost a requirement before you can heal, begin your healing. And there's nothing wrong with her rejecting it. As far as, you know, I don't want to talk about this right now. Let's go do this instead, or blowing it off, or I'm busy right now, something. At least you know where you stand.
Yeah.
And you know you're never going to get
that's
that.
True.
I'm sorry. Or I'm accountable.
Yeah.
And that, and you can live with that because that's who she is. But she's your mom and you still love her, you know, and you can, so it'll be easier to let it go.
And I wish I could get with my dad too, but my dad, he's chosen to hide out somewhere in Pennsylvania somewhere, and he doesn't want to contact anybody. And in a way, I don't think there's any hope with him. I really don't. My brother as well, he lives in the D.C. area. He has chosen to isolate himself from everybody. And the very person that my mom used to take up for is the very person who is vehemently against her now. Because when we grew up, he got all the favor. And whenever I did something wrong, he and my mom would gang up on me. But now he's the one who's the black sheep. And the only person I could really talk to was my mom. And I wish I could just get people, because a lot of times people say, oh, we're family, we should be able to talk. And what? Okay, well, if we're family, we should be able to talk, then let's talk then. You know, I don't hate you all or anything like that, but I'm just want to tell you all, this is how I felt and this is what's going on with me, and let you all know that you all had something to do with this. Once again, I don't like the thought of throwing it in their faces, but it might be something that they need to hear so they can understand, because now it seems like, you know, everything just been, like I said, just swept under the rug. Okay, this happened, so, you know, let's ignore it and everything. But it still has an effect on you, just like when you sweep dirt up under the rug, you know, if you didn't properly dispose of it, it's going to have an effect on your health or how your house looks or infestations and stuff like that, you know. And
just knowing it's there, like I said, you can't be real when you're around your family because these things are still in the back of your mind every time you have a get-together, you know, but it's killing you inside. It's eating at you. And I just, you know, if I may suggest that you write a letter to your dad, whether you mail it to him or not, that's up to you. Do the same about your brother. Explain these feelings as though they were sitting right in front of you. And if you have an address, mail it to him. And if you don't get a response, well, that's fine. At least you let it out. This is what I wanted to tell you. This is, you know, whether you want to listen or not, this is what happened with me growing up. This is where I'm at now. It's still affecting me. But, you know, it's not affecting you as far as letting you, you know, drag your life down. You rose above that. But it's still there. And then that will help let it go.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, and you have a sounds like a very loving wife and understanding wife. So, that's a blessing right there.
Yeah, she's my cheerleader. She won't let me get down too far.
That's good. All right, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I just wanted to let you know that, but these are something else when I would bring it up to my mom. Oh, you're so silly! I can't even believe you're bringing this up. You're just being silly. Am I?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Here's one of the problems too. You know, people in the church, they tend to twist certain scriptures around, like you're supposed to honor your father and your mother. I agree with that. You know, I agree with honoring my father and my mother, but that doesn't mean that they have the right to just treat their kids any old type of way. You know, they need to understand that, because there's a scripture that says, fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath. And that's in the scriptures too, but we don't hear that quoted that much over the pulpit. We always hear, you gotta honor your father and your mother, you know, and their birthday comes around, Father's Day, Mother's Day, you gotta give them something and everything. And I understand all that. But that does not give them an excuse to treat you any old kind of way. And that does not mean, because I'm the type of person, from what I knew when I was a kid to now, I'm the type of person, if you're toxic, I'm just going to cut you off, whether you mother or father or whatever. If you insist on being toxic, that doesn't mean that you have to be part of my life. I'll still love you and everything, but I can't keep the toxicity going on. Like I said, I had to deal with one of my wife's family members a few years ago, because she was being toxic towards me and my wife. And I said, you know what? I don't want her coming here anymore. And I said, if I could do that with her family, I should be able to do it with mine, you know. And
absolutely.
But, yeah. And it doesn't mean that you don't love them or anything. It just means you just want to get rid of that toxic atmosphere. You know, so.
Sure. I tell my parents we are better together when we're not together all the time.
Yeah. You know, yeah, exactly.
We need some distance. I can't live like around the block from you. If we have a get together, that doesn't mean that you're going to see me every day afterwards and that you're going to call me every day and we're going to talk, because that just doesn't work. And yeah, because my parents, they're the type of people that if you go to a gathering, that's it. They've got your claws in you and, you know, you're going to see you tomorrow, right? Are you staying the night, right?
Yeah.
Then we have work tomorrow. Well, we'll just get you up early. And then it's a regretful thing because the next day, oh, is that what you're wearing to work? Oh, you know, then it comes, you know, as far as the whole, God gets mad and we're stupid little bitches. And it's like, wow, okay, we've got to go.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, anyway, thank you very much for letting me share. Take care and hope for the best for you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. And like I said before, I'm going to get treatment for this. You know, my wife has even asked me, you know, you're going to go to the psychiatrist. And I say, yeah, I'm going to do that, you know, because I need some therapy for this because it really is eating me up on the inside. And but it's something I'm going to have to deal with, and I'll probably have to deal with it with my mom, you know. You know, just one day at a time. You know, like I've gotten accustomed to saying lately is bite-sized pieces, you know. But having said all that, I hope you all got something out of this program today. And I don't want to make it sound like that I'm trying to be, you know, contrary or anything like that. I don't want people to think that I don't like my family or stuff like that. I really love my family. I really do. And I wish we could come together like a lot of other families do, but until the toxicity gets out, you know, it's not going to happen. But you know, I want to thank everybody for listening. Next week, we're going to be back to normal next week, God willing. Next weekend is going to be Labor Day weekend, but I'm still going to be here that Saturday. I'm going to be here that Saturday, and we're still going to have another program and get back to what we're doing. And check out my logo. Check out my logo on the cover of this show, you know. We go to the show page, check out my logo, tell me what you think about it, whatever. That's going to be the logo of my my podcast, you know. And we're going to talk about a lot of things I talk about on this program. And we're also going to talk about, you know, the bad doctors in the churches and whatever. But I want to thank you all for coming out. I appreciate you all giving me your advice and whatever and things like that. It's time for me to go. You all take care of yourselves. Stay safe out there. Enjoy your week. This is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off. And until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. Y'all have a good week.